And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. We get to talk about a mildly warm Cubs team, winners of three of their last five. That's a 600 winning percentage, you know, if you do the math on that. And let me tell you, if you did that for a whole season, that's a good team. No, I mean, I kid. It is a bit of a natural rebalancing of what was probably, you know, a poorly performed and bad bounce stretch that the Cubs were having for a while there. And it is not necessarily indicative of some dramatic turnaround, both in fact or in narrative. But it was nice to see the Cubs win a couple of the first games of the series against the Mets. We're recording this on Thursday morning, so the Cubs have already taken the series as we sit here today, but we'll have the finale this evening, and we'll talk about that game in a moment because it's got kind of a cool component to it as well. But as for these first two games of the series, I just want to note the Cubs technically were chasing the Mets in the wild card standings. If you were a huge dork and looking at it as though the late May standings mattered, you might note that the Cubs made up some significant ground on the Mets there in those two games, and now just a couple games back in the wild card, 4.5 in the Central, still in it, as David Ross noted, because of, thank goodness for the crappy teams, the crappy other teams in the division. And I just wanted to say, May 25th, Cubs still in the race. I got a note from a valued listener who was like, Brett, you said you were going to check it. You were going to see how far you could go into the season, still noting at the top that the Cubs were still in the race. And I'd forgotten to do that. So, boom, there you go. May 25th, Cubs still in the race.
I guess you take it. I was just listening to some sports radio, and the White Sox talk is that they're still in it. So, I mean, come on. If the White Sox are still in it, the Cubs are still in it. I don't think we can, after the start.
Well, the AL Central is even crappier than the NL Central. Yeah. So,
I do like that Twins team, but yes, the Centrals are not very good. Just when you think, oh, look, the Cardinals are figuring things out, they lose a couple games to the Reds. We'll see what the
A funny oddity. Speaking of the divisions and looking at that way, I noticed it was a Codify baseball tweet that this was maybe 2 days ago, so I don't know if it still holds true, but there were only two divisions in baseball that collectively had a positive run differential. And it was the AL East, of course, where literally every single team has a positive run differential and a winning record. And the only other division was the NL Central, which I thought was kind of hilarious. Huh.
So no god-awful team to really bring that run differential down then?
I guess. Yeah. Well, and then you have the Cubs are skewing it by virtue of their, you know, solidly positive run differential against a record.
I think the Cardinals are
positive now. The Cardinals are positive, too.
Yeah.
The Pirates might be... No, the Brewers were negative as of... I got to check. They might have flipped that last night. But the Brewers... See, this is why run differential just gets me pissed off. And I know people, you know, people rightly dump on it because you got a game like the other night where the Rays, who are unquestionably the best team in baseball, lose 20-1 to the Blue Jays because they were losing, so they threw out a couple of position guys and it got skewed. And no, I get it. Early season run differential is not a useful tool. But, and I won't get into this, but the underlying metrics also say the Cubs should be a lot
better. It's totally useless, anyway, except the Cubs so always cite it as a reason for how things are going to turn every year. And that the best example or comp right now is like when the Bears are like 5-8-1 around between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and they show the graphic during the noon game of like in the hunt, and the Bears are like the last of nine teams. I know others have made that joke in that the past, I forget, but that's kind of
that is what I should say.
Big Cat
in the hunt.
Yeah, I think that's one of his go-to specials. But that's where the Cubs are right now. You're barely in the hunt on the like the on the fifth best,
they're still on the graphic.
Fox NFC game that weekend. They're like just in the hunt, you know, next to the Lions, something like that.
Well, let's go with that a little bit because Jed Hoyer was at, so the Cubs returned to Wrigley Field this week after that road trip, and I saw that Jed Hoyer spoke with the media, and I thought we could at least touch upon some of his comments about this topic where he, you know, it's look, I get it. I'm mildly defensive of the Cubs too, just as a fan. So it's sort of you're saying sort of both things at once, which is that, hey, you know, we're not winning. We're not getting those big hits and those big moments that matter, but also, you know, that's the thing is we're playing really well. It's just, you know, it matters when you get your hits. And I thought it was, I would wonder what the temperature is behind the scenes there for talking about this very topic where, you know, you're 2 months into the season and beyond run differential, like there are considerable underlying measures of a team's true talent that say, yeah, this is like a playoff quality team. And yet the record is what it is. And the deep struggles in the highest leverage moments when it matters most, I mean, it's pronounced. It's really, really pronounced. And so I just would wonder how they talk about it behind closed doors of like, you know, damn it, we're better than this. Or, oh, you know, those numbers are just fluky. I just wonder about that.
I think it's kind of, you know, it depends how granular you're going to go, right? With Jameson Taillon, it's we got to fix some things. We got to figure out what's wrong here. We can't just rely on the fact that he probably should have better numbers overall than he does, right? There are actual issues, and there it sounds like it's pitch usage that they're going to change up, and we'll see how he looks on Saturday. But then if you kind of just zoom out and look at everything, I think David Ross kind of touched on this in pregame yesterday and just said like some of the offensive stuff, the runners in scoring position, they're confident that they have the right group and that they have a group of guys that will knock in runs and knock in those runners on base. And some of this stuff goes up and down over the course of the year. And I mostly agree with that. My whole thing has been, I just don't know how good the offense is overall. Will the offense stay at the level that it's been at, which is like a 112 weighted runs created plus, right? So I just don't know. I want to see Cody Bellinger come back and be healthy and look like the same player he was, or at least close to that player in April. You know, you see him slump and you're like, oh man, was that April a mirage? Because he's a big part of it all. But I think I think it's kind of, you have to look at it both ways. I think of the bullpen, I think they clearly, like their actions speak pretty loudly, right? They're making as many changes as they can. They're changing roles in the minor leagues. They're getting prepared to, you know, hopefully call up younger arms. A guy like Cody Hoyer will likely be up here some point relatively soon, and that's potentially an impactful arm to the bullpen, so that they're not going to sit on their hands. And really, they haven't sat on their hands with the offense either, calling up Mervis and Morel, and obviously Mervis hasn't had the results. He's looked so much better at the plate overall the last week, I'd say. And then Morel, I mean, what can you say? It's hard to you know, throw much more praise on a player than you can with the way Morel's played and what we've talked about. He's just, I mean, it's kind of mind blowing what he's done. If he would have homered yesterday, that would have been the way the wind was blowing. I didn't think anybody was, but apparently a couple guys were able to knock it out. That I think that was the first time in a while where I really realized how much that video board changes everything, because
I thought exactly the same.
Yeah,
thing.
Yep. Because yep. Saya's ball should have been long gone, but it was just to the, you know, just to the left of the video board, and it just got killed and blown down. And Nico's got out pretty easily, and same with Francisco Alvarez.
Yeah, I think Jed Hoyer put it this way the other day of like, it's not early anymore, or it's not early forever. And, you know, in terms of a temperature check, like, if this is not like, you know, some sort of like epic meltdown and people are, you know, trying to save their jobs, but like they're very much aware that this next month is extremely important, that they have to start banking some wins, and that, you know, by the time they get to London, they can't be talking about, well, you know, our run differential was pretty good 3 weeks ago and stuff like that. Like, or our, you know, like, look at our expected WOBA, mate. Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, they need to start,
yeah, that's a good run differential, yeah, isn't it?
That's what we have. One of our athletic staffers in London is going to help us out with that as part of our coverage team, and we'll have to like really debrief him on all of these, you know, kind of obscure underlying things. But wait, the team's how many games under? Like, they have a losing record? No, but you got to see like what they're expecting. Well, but yeah,
that's
yeah.
not what we do in baseball.
So, I don't know. I think, you know, David Ross has been problem solving. The coaching staff has been trying to fix this. Certainly Jed Hoyer's front office has been pushing buttons and pulling levers. And I think, you know, they do have a stretch here where it's time to find out what you really have. And if certain pieces aren't working, then you swap them out. Whether it's some of these younger guys, in AAA, the Palencias and the Hoyers down there, and also kind of riding, I don't know if you'd say the hot hand, but like, you know, Morel clearly was not a guy that they wanted on their opening day roster or in their lineup. You know, there was a lot of, oh, you know, this guy, you know, defensively we have questions, offensively we have questions, and those are like reasonable. But, you know, as Paul Sullivan wrote in the Tribune the other day, like, it does kind of call into question, like, how well do the Cubs know their personnel or their kind of certain traits that they lean towards, or like, you know, the compromises they're willing to make on the roster. I think you have to give in certain areas, and certainly Christopher Morel is exactly that type of player, as opposed to some of the other placeholders or pieces that they moved around earlier in the year, kind of hoping to hold on to depth, or, you know, claiming or citing clubhouse influence. Like, you got to kind of go with you what you got right now and see what you have and see if that's enough to stave off a sell-off at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think maybe I'll just say one thing on Morel, and then we'll turn back to the series a little bit. I thought how you wrote about this topic, Mooney, was really good, and I agree. I also saw that point that Paul Sullivan made, and I thought that was fair, that on the one hand, it's completely reasonable and probably correct for Jed Hoyer to say, you know, that it is not reasonable to say, look, Morel did all of this at AAA in the first month, and you guys lost these close games, and so if he had been up, you'd have won more games. And it's like, well, several problems with that. You don't know that the games actually would have played out that way. You don't know that he would have hit that way in the big leagues. And worst of all, you don't know that he actually would have been set up to be succeeding like he is now. Can't know, right? That's fair. That's just correct. That's butterfly wings shit. That's real. But at the same time, you almost can't defer to that, because you're supposed to know your guys. You're supposed to know your own players better than anyone else. And so it's almost like your answer should be, you know, when you ask that question, should we have had him up earlier because maybe you would have won more games? The answer is no. We knew what he needed in that first month. he needed to, you know, he had changed his hands pre-set up. His swing is slightly different. He's elevating more. He needed definitively to get in a rhythm at AAA before he could come up and play every way. And Jed sort of got close to saying that, but not quite. And I think it just reminded me of this topic a lot that we talk about, how some, you know, when you are evaluating an organization in terms of its scouting and player development and trade and promotion decisions, all of these things, we usually look external. We're like, how do they do in this trade? You know, they got Peter Armstrong. That's great. Great move. Great deal. But how good are you at knowing your own players and the best organizations? Look at what the Rays are doing right now. It's like the best organizations know what they have and they move very quickly to put those guys into positions to succeed. And so it also got me thinking about the bullpen and how this year, unlike years past, you know, it's just sort of taking a little bit longer for those things to sort out. And this is not me being, you know, overly harsh or critical of where things are. It just that topic of knowing your own players, it just kept coming back to me this week a little bit.
Yeah, I will. I mean, I agree. You have to self-evaluate. Knowing what you have in your system on your team is really important, not only so you have the right players up at the highest level, but also so you put them in the right positions to succeed. I will say that Christopher Morel is one of those types of players that's really hard to know what you're going to get. He was really bad in the second half last year, right? I mean, I think Jed said it, but it was like a 260 something OBP, not batting average, right? On base percentage of like 260 something with a strikeout rate above 40%. I mean, that's rough. That's you want to see that he's made the corrections, but I can understand that, but you should also be able to see what he is in spring training, right? You should be able, if you really believe in what you're doing and the corrections he's made, but maybe they just needed to see it to believe it. Let's see it in AAA. Let's see how it looks in game action. And they did, right? And he proved that there's no point in him taking many more swings at AAA. As much as his defense needs work and he needs to find a defensive home going forward, it's clear that there's he's still developing offensively, which is scary to think the way he's played the past, you know, 2 weeks, but he clearly can impact the team on offense. I think it's important to have that type of bat for this team, because if you're looking at I just talked about how the offense is kind of surprised. If you're looking at like, well, how do they get better? What's the difference maker? And it's a guy that can change the game with one swing, like he can. Someone that can, you know, put it over the fence consistently. You'd like to think Saya is turning into that guy. Hap just isn't that guy anymore. Doesn't appear to be. Hap puts up a great at bat and can line the ball all over the field, but you know, I think maybe 20 home runs is kind of what he is now, which is fine. I mean, he's a really good player. So continuing to find power and slug is something that this team needs to do. So Christopher Morel and Matt Mervis just have to be here, unless there's a big move coming come July. Those they're going to really need power from those bats.
The questions that we're asking as media members or fans are asking at home while they're sitting on the couch are like exactly what Cubs people are talking about behind closed doors. I mean, Sahadev knows this, like wondering like, why is Eric Hosmer hitting sixth? Or, you know, Jesse Rogers asked the question to Jed Hoyer the other day about, you know, whether or not they should have started with Morel on opening day. Like that's exactly what Cubs people wonder about. The Cubs are not just like one kind of thought process. There's lots of different groups with, you know, kind of different priorities or agendas, and they're all trying to make it work. So there's not just like one simple solution or like a plug and play operation here. Like there are real decisions that have to be made all the time, and the Cubs just have to string together a lot of the right ones, like right now, to get this season turned around.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And when you have accumulated maybe more depth and more talent than, you know, sort of a baseline of talent than in recent years, the decisions get harder. And so, and we have some grace for that. And it's not, that's why I said it's not like any of this is a scalding critique of not knowing your own players. It's more of just a reiteration that, like, hey, having the depth and lots more talent is great, but there are only so many at bats and there's only so many pitches that can be thrown. So you got to make sure the right guys are in the right spots to do that. Speaking of which, the big news of the week. So Cubs beat the Mets in two games, get some really nice starts from Drew Smyly and Marcus Stroman. And starting tonight's game on Thursday is not going to be Jameson Taillon. He's pushed back to Saturday. It's that Kyle Hendricks is coming back. Now, after he last pitched the first week of July last year, noticeably had struggled for a year and a half in the run-up to that. Velocity was dipping further. His command was not nearly what we were used to seeing, so he was walking a little more, striking out a little less, and giving up lots and lots of really hard contact. And once it came out after that he had a capsular tear in his shoulder, I mean, that's an injury for a guy in his 30s that sometimes you can't really come back from. I think the good news was that the Cubs and Hendricks were able to attack it non-surgically, rehab him from a physical strength perspective and rework his mechanics in a way that they have kind of talked about as putting him in a better position, not only to succeed going forward, but to stay healthy going forward and just kind of give him a real chance. You know, it's almost like a second life at this game. And I am trying very hard to temper folks' expectations for what Hendricks can or will be. I think, you know, some of the video we've gotten from Iowa has looked pretty good. You know, you can see he's got the shorter arm stroke and pitches look good. He seems healthy, all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, he is 33. He is coming off a major gap in playing time. It was a shoulder injury, and he is not a high velocity guy. So he already, you know, we've talked about his margin for error was already very small just by the very nature of his style of pitching. And so if he can come back and be a capable back of the rotation arm and veteran presence and a good sounding board for the young pitchers, all that kind of stuff, that's a success. That's a huge success to get him back to that level. And if he's more than that, well, great. I will be gleeful and, you know, you'll hear it in future installments of the podcast. But for now, I'm just stoked as a fan to see him back because there is a little bit of that nostalgia factor for me. And also because he still is a part of the quality starting pitching depth that the Cubs have. You know, we talked for a while about, you know, they've got Adrian Sampson and they've got Javier Assad and they've got Hayden Wesneski and then Hendricks is going to come back and how are they going to, and of course these things work themselves out. We say that every year, like there's just, if you just wait, it probably sorts itself out. And lo and behold, Adrian Sampson, knee surgery, Javier Assad kind of bouncing between starting and relieving, Hayden Wesneski, some good stuff that we've seen, but also clearly some things he needs to work on in Iowa, and boom, Kyle is ready to return and the Cubs have an opening in the rotation and it all sorts itself out. And whether he sticks in that spot or not, and whether Wesneski emerges to come back, or whether Ben Brown is a guy they want to give a look, doesn't really matter, because that's, again, that'll take care of itself later on. For now, you just want more quality depth and you want to see a guy back that you can really root for, especially after missing almost a year.
Yeah, I think that's a really good perspective. I mean, he threw 90-something, 90.2 the other day, I believe. So that's, I mean, that's a really good sign, right? But this is...
I didn't even want to say it out loud, because then when he throws tonight and he's throwing, 87, 88, which is
perfectly
fine.
Yeah.
He was 85, 86 right. The year before. So I don't want people to be like, what? I heard he was at 90.
He's always just been a hard guy to scout, right? He's the type of guy that when he was carving up the minors when he first came up, that like so few people thought he would still be effective in the big leagues. That's just how it is with that type of stuff. It's really hard. Like you said, the margin of error is razor thin, because if his command's a little bit off with any of his stuff, it can be really messy. And then there's the luck factor, too. He's not going to miss a lot of bats, so the ball in play is going to bite him at times. So there, even when he was at his best, there were games where it was just like, oh, man, everything's finding a hole. And everyone's going to lose their mind when he gives up six base hits in an inning or whatever, and it's, 4-0 early. It's going to be good to see him back on the mound. It matters in the sense that this is the guy that started game 7 of the World Series for this team. He's the last remaining player from that team on the roster. All those things I think Cubs fans should make sure to appreciate. I don't know what we're going to get from him. It'd be great if he's productive, if he's really effective, can give them 5 quality innings. It's just so hard to evaluate a guy like that at AAA. All you can say is make sure you're healthy. The stuff is kind of close to where it once was. Have some modicum of command, but like the command looked like it was there. You just don't know. You just don't know with a guy like him. Even one good start, we won't know, right? I always felt like it was start to start with him, even when he was at his best. Like, when is this going to kind of fall apart? Obviously, 2016 gave us a lot of confidence. 2016 was when he finished third in Cy Young. Gave us a lot of confidence in what he could do, and then he had a few years where there were like 2 or 3 month stretches where he looked exactly like that guy. And of course, 2020 was the last time we saw him like that guy. I mean, he was so good that season, as close to 2016 as you can get. So I'd like to see some vintage Kyle Hendricks starts, just to, so he could go out, whether this is going out or whatever you want to call it. So our lasting memory isn't that, the last couple of years that we saw him where he just wasn't close to the pitcher he once was. You'd like to, they're so often that we think a guy is done and then they're able to put together a year or two where they look similar to who they were, or at least can be effective. Adam Wainwright isn't a great example presently, but I would say last year he was kind of that example. I want to say John Lester's end of his career was better. Am I remembering that right? Or did he get, like, wasn't his last season away from the Cubs, like his, not with
Cardinals
the Cubs,
legend,
this is
John
last
Lester.
Season,
he
was
won
good.
His 200th game there.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
He's got the red jacket and everything.
And even like a guy like... And even like a guy like Jose Quintana put it, like when we thought he was pretty much done, he came back and had a few good seasons too. So let's just hope for the best with Hendricks. But I just don't know what to expect. I have no clue with a guy like that.
Totally agree, Sadev. No one knows, but I have over time repeatedly learned that Kyle Hendricks constantly defies expectations. I mean, we've all covered this for a long time, going back to the Ryan Dempster trade when he was the other prospect, when he filled into the rotation After Samardzija and Hamill were traded to Oakland in the middle of the 2014 season, even kind of around that 2015 time, I was like, oh, maybe he could be like a fifth starter on an okay team, but not like on a championship caliber team. And just, I think we have all learned the more you follow this stuff that like the individual personality matters a lot. And that doesn't mean that Kyle Hendricks can like outthink everyone again and will himself to being a frontline starter again. But as an industry, we spend a lot of time dreaming about, you know, prospects we've never even seen before in like Myrtle Beach and like, oh man, how great could this be? Or like every time the Cubs pick up some dude off the scrap heap of like, oh, wait till we get him in the pitch lab. Let's see what they could, you know, work their magic on him. This guy has done it at the absolute highest level at the game for a really long time and is probably the most consistent, even-keeled person you'll ever meet, one of the smartest but most humble people you'll ever encounter, and also someone who's extremely athletic and has really unique stuff that I think at times maybe he hasn't gotten credit for. So it will be a great show at Wrigley tonight just to see what he has left. I don't know how determinative it will be, but it'll be fun to, you know, just see where this leads, because you're talking about one of the most consequential players in franchise history.
I think whether it looks great, whether it looks bad, whether it's somewhere in the middle, I don't think we're going to know, you know, capital K, know anything after just tonight's start. And so I think all of that tracks. Like, let's just enjoy the moment, which this isn't a nostalgia tour. It really isn't. This is a guy the Cubs are hoping can contribute. And Mooney's right. If this were a guy from another organization that the Cubs had gotten a hold of, it'd be like, well, you know, he used to be really good and he's healthy now. And look, he would reworked his mechanics. And I mean, we would absolutely be doing that dance. So I look forward to it in that respect. Fun fact, if I'm not mistaken, I'll be corrected if I am. But when Hendricks takes the mound tonight, there will nevertheless still be more players on the other side of the diamond from the 2016 World Series who were members of the Indians at the time, Lindor and Carrasco, right? We're both part of that team. And Hendricks is the only one remaining on the Cubs, unless you count David Ross. So that is funny that even as the Cubs are playing the Mets only 7 years later, there's still more on the other team than with the Cubs. That's how much turnover there has been. So that's what we'll be watching tonight as the Cubs wrap up their series against the Mets, and then they welcome the Reds for three. And we all know what we'll be watching this weekend, the Succession series finale. I mean, yeah, I'll look at Cubs Reds. Yes. A little
cousin
bit.
Greg was at Wrigley, the disgusting brothers.
He was at this. I mean, I know that not everyone watches Succession, but that was too funny, the timing that one of the lead actors in the show was at the Cubs game last night. And of course this series is ending this weekend. So I hope that's a good sign and not some
sense of foreboding. They put his real name on the board and like, we're all on the breast box. Like, is that cousin Greg? And then you had to like Wikipedia, you know, okay. That's actually him.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what happens to cousin Greg this weekend. May perhaps be a premonition for whatever is going to happen to the Cubs the rest of the way. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs/Succession podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's the Hadik Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get theirs at The Athletic. We appreciate you listening as always. Reviews, comments, ratings, tell your friends, all that good stuff helps. And we'll talk to you again after the weekend.
Thank you.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.